Cheerscast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
Buenas noches, amigos.
¿Qué tal, Pepe?
Los pezones, Sammy. Esa agua está muy fría.
Good one, man. Good one. You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me to discuss the concluding chapter in the Martin Teal two-parter is returning champ Omar Yudin. Welcome back, Omar.
How's it going, Ryan? Good to be with you.
Good to have you back. Before we get into this one, any thoughts about Martin Teal as a character before we dive into this chapter?
Oh, you know, just like perfectly cast. I can't remember the actor's name. But just the embodiment of like just the little corporate weasel, you know, the actor strongly reminds me of I wish I knew.
Alex Neville was the actor's name. Yeah.
OK, Alex Neville. Thank you very much. There was a wonderful casting of former Vice President Dan Quayle on SNL during the Dana Carvey Bush years. And like it was essentially just like a kid, like an overgrown kid. And I just could not help but think of that, the parallel between the two. I mean, there's a physical similarity between the two of them and like their posture and just the way they carry themselves that I just absolutely love. Just a great bit of casting by these guys on here.
John made the Dan Quayle comparison in the last episode. Yeah. When we were about, yeah. So that's not lost. And I kept kind of coming back to, I wonder if in their notes, they were like, we need a Dan Quayle type or a Michael J. Fox type, but obviously not Michael J. Fox because
probably
he was
the
too
Michael
well
J.
established
Fox.
At the time.
Yeah, probably the and it might have been a Dan Quayle type because I think season 7 is like right in the heart of not just you said this was the fourth episode, so this is like right.
This
in
is
the
88,
heart of like
yeah,
just before the election, like October, November of 88, and by that point, Quayle was like well ensconced in the national media. He'd had his humiliating moment in the debate and he was like pretty much a national punchline. So it's possible that they had him in mind directly.
Right. All right. Well, let's get into this one. We are on season 7, episode 4, One Happy Chappy in a Snappy Serappy. One of my favorite episode titles. It's a play on the lyric from the old, the song, The Three Caballeros. The lyric goes, we're three happy chappies with snappy serappies. Anyway, this one is written by Sherry Aiken and Bill Steinkellner, directed by Jim Burrows, of course. The original air date was Thursday, November 17th, 1988. So after the election.
Yeah.
Of course, this would have been written and filmed much earlier. But
yeah, but at that point, like Dan Quayle was probably well in the mind of everyone.
Mm-hmm. Right. This was in the campaign season. So.
Yep.
In order to fend off Martin's marriage proposal, Rebecca tells him that she is already engaged to Sam. Martin outflanks her, however, by offering Sam a month-long job tending bar at a seaside resort in Cancun, an opportunity that Sam literally jumps at. 1 month later, Sam misses his return flight, and Martin tells Rebecca that's a sign that Sam has forgotten about his life at Cheers, and specifically his relationship with her. Rebecca goes down to Cancun to bring Sam back to Boston, first asking, then begging, and then threatening with a gun until she realizes it's a futile effort. Back at Cheers, Rebecca gets drunk and accepts her fate. Martin comes over with a justice of the peace, wanting to marry her on the spot. At the last minute, Sam, the dashing caballero, walks in and convinces Martin that he loves her and came back to Boston to be with Rebecca. Martin gives up the effort to win Rebecca and leaves. Rebecca agrees to sleep with Sam in thanks, but then passes out drunk in his arms. Sam resists the desire to take advantage of her sexually, choosing instead to draw a mustache on her face and cover her in his sombrero. Alrighty. Before I ask your take on this episode, I'll be upfront with mine. I've kind of previewed this one in some of my statements in earlier episodes. This is one of my all-time favorite episodes of Cheers. And I grant that it is nowhere near as substantive as some of the other episodes that are really, really good. A lot of the, like the Diane episodes, like the ones that have a lot of emotional meat or a lot of character depth. It doesn't have any of that. It's a silly episode, but it's a really silly episode. And I love so many of the gags in this one, and they have lasted with me. And there's just like, there's sight moments, there's smart things, there are things that ways that it plays with the kind of meta text of the bar when we go to Cheers South in Cancun, sort of. It has one of my favorite reveals in this episode that we'll come to later on and everything. I cannot get enough of this episode. And it's not a terribly memorable one, I think, in the larger history of the show. Or like I said, not a real substantive episode, but it's still always at like the top list of like my top 10, maybe top 5 episodes. What do you, I just put it way up on a big pedestal. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, that's a little bit surprising to me. I mean, I will stipulate it was very, very good. And, you know, of the like quote unquote serialized episodes of the latter day Cheers stuff, the Kirstie Alley Cheers era, I don't think it's as memorable an arc as anything involving like Rebecca's fixation with Mr. Drake or like anything involving Robin Colcord. But like rather than like a home run, I do think this episode is like a solid double or triple. It's very funny. I mean, for me, everything crystallizes with, as you put it, Cheers South. and just seeing Ted dance. I mean, there's this like very memorable image I have of like when they first cut to him of like the parrot on his shoulder while he's holding a tiki torch, which is just like, it's just fantastic. And you know, I do like how they subvert the sort of like, you know, the corporate stuff with Rebecca and like the boss, the inverse of the dynamic with Evan Drake. I think he's so well cast, but it is enjoyable. I would not put it, I mean, I understand from what you're saying that there are a lot of little moments in this that add up to something incredibly memorable that would qualify it for like one of your all-time favorite episodes. Didn't quite hit as much for me, but it was like extremely enjoyable and the sign of like a sitcom firing on all cylinders simply by kind of leaning into its strengths. And in this case, the biggest strength was like Sam's utter decency that brings him, you know, that ultimately brings him back. So yeah, no, I wouldn't go as far as you, but again, instead of a home run, I think a solid double, solid triple, that's plenty enough for me to enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. For the teaser, whenever we get these kind of two-parters, I love the way that Cheers dealt with having recaps of the previous episode. They found a way of kind of like weaving it into the narrative of the teaser so that it wasn't just a previous episode or something like that. In this case, Rebecca is on the phone in her office with a helpline. And she's like explaining her predicament. She's like, I've got nowhere else to turn, nobody else to confide in. So I need your help. She's like, my name is, and she calls herself Rapunzel because she doesn't want to give away her name. And she later refers to Sam as Samson. And when she says that her boss is upstairs at Melville, she corrects it by saying Melmonico's instead of Delmonico's. But all of this is kind of weird. So she kind of like explains that her boss, and she's like, how do I describe him? He's like a weaselly little twerp. And she says that he is in love with her and he asked her to marry him. But she doesn't want to turn him down without getting fired. So she goes through the whole thing and then kind of like says, it's like, well, am I doing the right thing? And the guy on the phone is like, I think so, but did you have a gardening question? Because you called the Dr. Green Thumb Show. And she hangs up. And then of course the gag is that Carla has been listening to the radio the whole time.
The way they were able to sort of get around the previously on Cheers aspect of it with this expository dump was fantastic. And that, you know, the payoff for me was Carla's expression when she walked into the office. Just lovely. Just a you know, one more in a series of humiliations for Rebecca that Kirstie Alley plays like very, very well.
Norman Cliff, who unfortunately Norm Cliff and Fraser don't have much to do in this one, but at the beginning of it, they are complimenting each other on their golf games and really kind of like showing up with how well they shot. And Fraser is really impressed until he finds out that they're talking about mini golf. Finds out that Woody shot under 80 for 17 holes or for 18 holes. Well, 17 holes, because the 18th hole is the windmill. And if you're stupid enough to play that one, the windmill is going to eat your little colored ball. So. And yeah, then Martin comes down from Melville's and he's berating one of his underlings. Cliff has a line, how does a guy that young get to be so incredibly powerful? Woody, of course, assuming he's thinking about him, is like, I just try to maintain a cheerful attitude, not abuse my position.
Great moments for these guys. You're right that they don't have a lot to chew on, but it's just like the comic timing that they are able to deploy pretty deftly is nice. It's nice. They're a Greek chorus, not doing much, but like their moments are like amusing. That's all you can ask for. And it's with a cast that big and talented, not everyone's going to be able to carry the ball all the time.
Yeah, but at least at this point, they're good enough that if they only get one line, they're going to nail it. So, and Frazier mentions that he read a profile of Martin Teal in Forbes and that Martin took over his father's firm at 17 and kicked the old guy out and hasn't looked back since. Remember that little bit of information for later on.
And yes, and related, this is when he sends one of his underlings, Dennis, to fetch Rebecca, right?
Yes, yeah, and because Woody offers, and Martin's like, eh, don't bother, and he sends Dennis, and Dennis is like, the master of the universe awaits your presence. And last episode, Dennis was very much just the sycophantic yes man, even like noted, like observantly, admittedly so. And that's when Rebecca's like, I sense bitterness. I've never heard you talk this way. And he's like, oh, I can tell you stories, honey. So we're getting a little bit of character from Dennis, a little bit of this kind of resentment, which is a nice bit of character development, because I'll come back to Dennis too. And Rebecca is still trying to convince Martin that she's with Sam, and he won't believe her until he sees a ring on her finger. So she says that they're engaged. And Norm just happens to be at that side of the bar getting some like beer nuts or pretzels or something at the point. So when Sam walks in, Norm is like, hey, congratulations, Sammy. And Sam's like, what for? She was just a stewardess.
Oh, my God. The timing. Again, the timing on that, like, absolutely perfect.
Yeah. And, of course, when he says that, Martin, like, the facial expression, the way Martin just, like, looks at Rebecca, is like, seriously? Like, you're gonna continue with this charade? And she does try to play along with it, and she pulls Sam aside and over by the phone, she begs him to pretend for her that they're engaged, and Sam's like, alright, if I go along with this, will you go to bed with me? and she's like, put it this way, if you don't go along with this, I'll never go to bed with you. And that phrase
trips. That is such a perfect scene because of the diagram he draws to try and figure out, you know, just the logical implication of what she's saying. It just starts out with him trying to piece it together, and then he starts trying to like simulate it on the wall. It's just perfect.
He's like, this is you, this is me, this is the bed. He's like trying to invent some kind of diagram of where do these things intersect. So yeah, he pretends for Martin, and then Martin congratulates them, and Sam like grabs Rebecca. He's like, looks like Rebecca is going to be my ever loving, everlasting bundle of little kisses, and goes to kiss her, and she flinches her mouth away at the last minute. And he's like, my bundle of open mouth kisses. And she's like, fends him off again. And Martin,
oh, in the sour way, Martin tries to congratulate them and describing Rebecca as like the one thing he hasn't gotten. And Sam's like, yeah, same here.
Such a good line. Yeah, same here. So Martin asked them, when is the big event? And Sam's like, well, I was hoping tonight. He's like, you're getting married tonight? He's like, oh, married. Oh, I thought you were talking about something else.
What makes this so consistent, I mean, I don't remember a lot of episodes that have this many like little asides that depend on like the writing and the comic timing coming rat-a-tat. I mean, I feel like there are always like a couple in each episode, but here it's just like just by the bucketful.
Yeah, non-stop sexual innuendos and asides. And then we get to the heart of this where Martin offers Sam a gig tending bar for a month at a seaside resort in Cancun. And Sam is like, I'm there. And he pushes Rebecca out of his way. And she like does this little spin as he's hiding her away. And she comes back and she hits him. And she's like, what are you? She's like, you big lucky. He's like, oh, yeah, I can't. He's like, that wouldn't be fair to Rebecca. I was like, who can we get to replace me? And Martin's like, oh, we'll just exchange with a bartender from down there. And Sam runs out the door going, adios, amigos.
Well, I mean, and again, that's only matched by like Rebecca defiantly being like, I don't even remember what the exact line is, but like, you can send him away for a week or a month. But like, you know, I'm still going to be like top of mind. He's only going to be thinking of me. And at that exact moment, he walks back in and he's like, do they have drugstores down there? He's like, I can pack a bag.
It's such good. And Martin just, he has such a smug grin on his face when Sam says that. It's such a good moment. He's like, I got this guy's number. Because Rebecca's like, did you send him down there just to get rid of it? Because it won't work. And then, of course, it's like, that's of course what Sam is thinking about. So we cut to 1 month later. Sam has been gone, and he's been replaced by a bartender named Ramon. There's a sign on the door or on the wall that says, "We missed you, Senor Sammy," as they're expecting him to come back. And Carlo walks Ramon to the door, and he bids this sad farewell to the wonderful bar and the people that he has grown to care about. All of this is in Spanish. And he takes Carla delicately by the hand and plants a kiss on her. And then with the same line, he goes, "Adios, amigos." And he walks out the door, and Carla just kind of leans back. She's like, "I don't know what that Latin lover said, but I sure like the way he said it." And low-key, Carla has some really good moments in this episode that I love.
He does.
But Cliff is like, you know, study after study have shown that the old sons of Spain just don't have our sexual prowess. Norm is, Cliffy, nobody has your sexual prowess.
I love how Cliff's like, hey, thanks, Norm.
And Rebecca asks if anybody has heard from Sam. And Carla is leaning back, wiping sweat off her face. Like, no one has heard from him in weeks. And Martin and Dennis show up. And Martin says that Sam missed his return flight. And Rebecca says, well, she'll call Cancun. And Dennis pulls a portable phone, one of those phones that was the size of a shoe back in the
day. Yeah, it just sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah. Although he did get it out of that briefcase, but and Rebecca's like, "You're so helpful, Dennis," and he kind of gives her, he's like, "I'm 5 months from retirement." Like, yeah, another little bit of Dennis that I liked. And then that's when we get to the moment where we see down in Cancun, and Sam is partying with the patrons, holding a tiki torch, and he has like a parrot or a cockatiel or something on his shoulder as they're just playing the music,
it's
and he's
just an
dancing around
visual.
The bar in line, and it's
like
such
pure goofy bliss.
Yeah,
like, and you're just like, why would he ever leave this place?
This is almost kind of what I imagine, like, what he wanted his life to be when he took his boat and sailed after Diane left.
Oh, like, that's a really good observation. That's probably true.
Like, I think in another lifetime, this is where Sam would have ended up, and this is what his life would have become, except, as he said, he ran into an atoll that sank his boat. But so then we come back and we have one of my favorite bits of dialogue. And this is one of the runners up for my home run. But Martin tells Rebecca, he's like, "You're not losing anything." And Sam, I hear he hasn't stopped fooling around since he got down there. And Rebecca says, "You had him watched?" And this part, Martin goes, "I didn't have to. The man's escapades have become legendary. The Indians in the mountains sing a folk song about him."
Just perfect. Just
it is my favorite descriptor of Sam in the entire history of the show. Like, that is just that moment. It's like the Indians in the mountains sing a folk song about him. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like, when you think about, like, Diane writing a paper about, like, Sam's sexual proclivities and everything like this, and all of the things that he's gotten up to, and where the character will be, and the way, yeah, of course, the guys in the bar live vicariously through him, but the status that has gone, like, trans-global, like, as this folk hero of wanting, like, sexual vigor and stuff like that.
As was inevitable, given his legendary prowess.
Yeah.
It was inevitable, it was bound to happen anyway, but what I love is, you know, again, just to go to your point about, like, look, the non-Sam Rebecca members of the cast don't have a whole lot to do, but I do love that little scene. Is it just after where, you know, where Norm is just kind of like making the conclusion that, like, wait a second, something's going on here.
Yeah, we have a serious problem here.
Yeah.
It's like, do you need another beer, Mr. Peterson? It's like, okay, two problems. Yeah.
And like that whole scene of where Norm articulates that, my God, he might not ever come back. And they, you know, they work up this plan tentatively to, like, for them to all go down there. I mean, for heaven's sake, they have vacation time coming up, and they're sort of like painting this picture of, you know, like a scenic trip and how great it would be. And just like very just as quickly, and they get excited, but just as quickly, the inertia of their situation just brings them right back to being like, yeah, pass probably.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Yeah. And the last part of that scene that we skipped to do, Carla dashed out of the bar to get Ramon back when she found out that Sam wasn't coming back. And she brings him back. And she's like, "I caught him by the cat as he was getting the cab. I caught our little Ricardo Montalban." And was like, how come you call Ramon Ricardo Montalban? She's like, "Because his tight little chinos are packed with rich Corinthians." in leather. And Woody actually checks him out. He's like, oh yeah, I can see it.
That's a nice bit of like physicality from Woody Harrelson. That's just very cool.
Yeah. So then we cut down to Cheers South or Cancun Cheers. And we get a moment. This was one of those famous little clips that was in the 200th episode. One of the customers at the bar is like, hey, bartender, can we get a couple beers over here? And Sam was like, yeah, sure thing. Just let me finish making this margarita. And he turns to a woman. He's like, so anyway, margarita. And then bless.
Oh, perfect. Perfect moment. You got me up.
One of the best guest stars, a man named Pepe, played by Fred Asparagus, who guest starred in the movie The Three Amigos. He was in This Is Spinal Tap and Beverly Hills Cop. He walks in, Buenos noches, senor. And they're like, Pepe! Everybody greets him. And you're like, oh, and it takes a second for the studio audience to catch it. But then they're like, oh my God, it's Mexican Norm. It's like, they're like, they get it. And it's like,
yeah.
And then just to cap it off, same like, que tal, Pepe? And he does a Norm joke. He says that it's like, Sam's like, what's up, Pepe? And he goes like, my nipples, it's freezing outside, except he says it in Spanish. But yeah. So if you don't understand it, but you can get it from inference, so he shivers and everything. And Sam just laughs, like, you crack me up, man.
It's that whole exchange. It's fun. I totally respect you having, you know, like the Teal's line about the man's escapades becoming legendary as like the number one, like, side, but like just the everyone yelling Pepe and just that connection is like one of the iconic moments of that entire era of the show. That is a nice, neat little concise demonstration of like the cultural currency that show had.
That is such an established trope of the show, the Normisms, which honestly they haven't done in a while. Like in the show, they haven't done one of his like greetings and stuff like that for a number of episodes, but it's so well known. It's so baked into the DNA of the show now that they can do a joke about that joke and it works, and they'll do more in the future. And they'll make other like meta jokes about that type of thing. And it works. It's so funny. And I don't know if you noticed when you were watching it, the second half of this episode, the quality of the videotape goes out.
I did notice that. I didn't know what was going on. I thought it might have been a problem with like the digital version I was watching that they didn't get the master copy.
Whatever the master copies, because I know that was on the DVDs when they released the DVDs too. You'll notice it every once in a while, and sometimes it's just like one particular shot or one particular scene in the episode. It's not common. It's pretty rare, but it's not unheard of. But this episode, there's a lot of scenes where it's like that. Whatever the master copy was,
it's a little jarring because it honestly looks like something in like the editing room. They lost the master copies and they had to throw in some like, you know, some outtakes or something.
Poorly lit, like it just doesn't like match. But anyways, at this point, Rebecca comes in and she's carrying Sam's bag fully packed. And she's like, I stopped by your room. I can't believe you didn't pack one pair of underpants. And Sam, he has no desire to go home. He says he loves it down here. He's found his home. And she begs him to come rescue her from Martin. Because if she has to turn him down, she'll be fired. And Sam's like, well, there are plenty of job opportunities down here. Can you paint pictures on turtles? and then she begs him, she pleads with him, he would be doing just one good thing. Don't you want to do one noble thing and help her out of this jam? And he's like, this shouldn't be turning me on, should it? And at that point, she's like, okay, I asked you politely. I asked you as a friend. I begged you. Now it's business. She pulls out a gun, which I this was in like IMDb's trivia. This is the fourth time in the show that Sam has had a gun pulled on him.
Seems simultaneously excessive and not enough.
Yeah. It won't be the last time, by the way. Two of those times were in the same episode. It was a jealous husband who found out that Sam had slept with his wife. And then the other one was Andy. So Rebecca pulls the gun. The crowd freaks. Everybody ducks under their tables. Pepe ducks under the bar but grabs his drink with him.
Perfect.
Rebecca's like, I bet you wish you had those underpants now.
That's a great line. That is a great line. In an episode where Kirstie Alley doesn't get nearly as many like good comic asides and an opportunity to show off like her comic chops and timing as Ted Danson. Like, that is a great line.
Yeah, yeah. And Sam like calms her down. It doesn't take a whole lot, but he helps her see the reason, and he gets the gun from her like gently and everything like that, and he keeps the peace. Like, it's fine, everybody. No harm and everything. This was just a joke. And she's like, okay. She feels defeated and she's ready to leave. And he's like, you can't just go. You pull a gun on me in the middle of a resort in a foreign country. He's like, they have laws, you know? And then he turns to Pepe. He's like, don't they? And Pepe just kind of shrugs. He's like, yeah. So Pepe asks if all women from Boston are that crazy. And Sam's like, no, Rebecca is the queen of crazy and has been ever since he met her. And she's fixed on her career. And Sam tells Pepe how Rebecca wants him to pretend to be her fiance because she doesn't want to marry this pint-sized executive. And he's like, what do I get for my troubles? A gun in my face. And he's like, you know what the sorriest thing is? Me. It's like, I still like her. Why is that? Pepe kind of shrugs again. He's like, nice buns, Sammy? And Sam just looks at you like, you people see things so clearly. It's like,
you know, I will say it's a nice punchline, obviously, but like, it is a nice little heartfelt moment for Sam when he has that reckoning.
That little moment of humanity and compassion, understanding that we'll see manifest and everything. But just like, yeah, the wisdom of Mexican Norm, I think it's just really, is really nice in this scene. So. Back at Cheers, it's closing time, and Norm and Cliff invite Ramon back, come back to Casa de Claven to watch a movie, and Ramon kind of begs them off, and Cliff is like, oh, he's a nice guy, but he's no Sammy, and then Norm points out that Ramon is leaving with two women, and Norm's like, then again, he's a lot more Sammy than you and I will ever be. Rebecca is drunk and starting to accept her fate, thinking about the positives. Martin is rich and he'll take care of her and she can live in a huge house and just be nasty to the help just because.
Let it never go unsaid that yeah. Kirstie Alley playing like Rebecca when she's at her most pathetic is always a revelation, and throw in drunk and pathetic. Perfect.
It's good. It's good. Well, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We'll see a lot more in future. But, you know, Carla, you know, like beats her down and everything like that. And as Martin comes in, there's this moment. Carla walks up to Martin. She's like, hey, we're the same size. And she says it with a smile and walks out. And it's just like, oh, it's just like the friendliest, but like, harshest little dig. Like, she could have said so many cruel things that are in her repertoire, her inventory of insults. But that line she says with a smile, and it's just like this, ouch. And you see,
let it be
even
said,
Martin
that,
is kind of like
Rita Perlman is 5 feet, and so yeah. That is quite diminutive for our young Mr. Teal.
Yes, and it's so good. And he just kind of like watches her leave and everything like that. So he proposes again. He's like, will you do the honor of becoming my wife? And Rebecca just big sigh, I guess. And then Martin brings in Dennis, a justice of the peace, and a guy carrying 4 dozen long-stemmed roses. And Rebecca tries to stall again. She's like, my parents aren't here. Your parents aren't here. And if anything could top Pepe in that entrance for my home run of this episode, it's this moment when Martin says, well, my mother passed away, and you know my father. And motions to Dennis standing right next to him. This was a joke 2 episodes in the making. I think that's why this is so good, because we didn't just meet these characters. Like we met him in the last episode. We've spent time with this relationship and this sycophantic thing. And now you think back to Frasier saying that he read about Martin, how he took over his father's firm and kicked the old guy out. And everything like that. And then it seemed like he's 5 months from retirement and this whole little history, and just flips it on its head. It's like, this is the way he treats his dad, and he wants Rebecca to be his wife. And Dennis just says it with a smile, but a warning. He's like, welcome to the family. And just that reveal. Like, oh my God, that is so good. It's so funny.
Well, again, just the facial expression on Dennis throughout the entire episode when he's on, but like particularly in this moment, just like a priceless payoff.
Yeah. And just when Martin is demanding that they get married, Sam comes in wearing a strappy and a sombrero and goes, I'm back, call off the federales. And he walks right past Martin and gives Rebecca this big passionate kiss. And then a moment that could just go by unnoticed, but I love this little detail, is Sam takes a step back after kissing Rebecca, walks and steps right into Martin, but like with a sombrero on his back.
Oh my God. Because of their height difference, thank you for mentioning that.
The sombrero hits Martin like right in the face, and Sam just turns around and looks at him like, oh, sorry, I didn't see you down there. It's so perfect. Dismissive.
It's this, again, this perfect bit of physical acting, just from hitting it, like knocking into him, and then like turning around, and the expression on his face, just like absolutely great.
Like, it is such like this, like, you're so small, you're so insignificant, you're like a kid brother tagging along, and it's like, oh yeah, what are you doing here? And it's just like I never even, despite this guy's like powerful status, like, it never occurred to Sam that he would be a threat if he wanted him to be. And it's just like how fast that turns.
Just the ultimate kick in the pants.
Yes, and that's really kind of what seals it, because Rebecca says she has to follow her heart, which is Sam in this case. And, you know, Martin's like, yeah, you blew it in a big way by passing him up. And he's like, well, this – and he, like – she's like, is this going to affect our working relationship? He's like, I don't see why it should. And then he kind of walks off, and Rebecca's like, when I sober up, I'm probably going to worry about this. And Sam says, you know, there's a way that Rebecca can thank him for saving her. And she's like, yep, the time has finally come. And then she passes out in his arms, and he sits her, he leaves her on the chair, and he does take a moment to kind of look her up and down. And you're like, oh, Sam, whatever you're thinking, don't do it. And he's like, no, I'm a gentleman. He drapes the is over her like a blanket. He's like, but I might never get this chance again. He goes to the bar, he grabs a marker and draws a mustache on her face, and then puts the sombrero on her head, and he walks out laughing to himself.
A really beautiful, poignant way and funny way to end an episode that could have turned like very ugly in a moment that, like, even the implication in this day and age of what he was thinking is a non-starter and awful. I just love the fact that they turned that into like a nice little comic moment.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, like one of aside from being really funny and having some of my favorite like comedic and revelatory moments in the show, like if Sam is the hero, and I think Sam is my favorite character on the show. Maybe not. Maybe Woody, maybe Norman, you know, it varies so much, but like Sam is the constant. He is the hero you want to root for. You want to love this character so much. And he gives you so many reasons to, and this episode, without getting too nuanced or having like he doesn't really have an arc in this episode. It's not like he has any kind of, he does something stupid and has comeuppance or any kind of like twist or turn or anything like in his character in this episode. But it's just a showcase of everything that the guys love about Sam, everything that Carla loves about Sam, everything that the audience wants to love about Sam at his best. It is like, this is an example of the ideal Sam Malone. And he makes it look so effortless. Yep.
Being a Casanova, being incredibly fun-loving, being loose, like having like the great lines, and then like the moral conscience like coming through in the end.
Yeah, yeah. And again, it's not deep, and I accept it. Like, there's so many episodes that ones that we have talked about, and other episodes that I've covered that are just so have just so much more meat. It is more shallow in that instance, but it's funny, and I love it. It's just such a fun little bite-sized encapsulation of the things that I love about Sam, and that's why this one is gets high marks for me. When I do my whole ranking, like when I actually did a ranking of my top 50 episodes, and that was 15-20 years ago, this was very high on the list. I'm doing that again as I go through this. Will it be that high? I don't know. I'm not sure, but it is. It is a favorite of mine that I'll always come back to with such fondness.
Yeah, with good reason. Like I said, I mean, I think the emotional stakes or whatever are not necessarily as high in terms of my personal preference of the early years, and in terms of like sheer watchability, entertainment value for the serialized stuff, it's in of the later years, it's less compelling to me than, you know, the stuff with like Robin Colcord, for example. But I do think as a pure distillation of what makes these characters, Sam Malone in particular, like a fun hang that people eagerly went back to for like 11 seasons. you could do so much worse than this episode, which lays all of his strengths to bear. Like, you basically get the full, like you said it, you basically get the full Sam Malone experience.
Right, right. For Norm's tab, Norm had 5 beers this episode, which brings him up to 605 for the series. Who was your employee of the week?
Gonna sub in Pepe.
Okay.
I think that it just, again, the symbolism of Pepe basically bringing full circle. I mean, that Norm chant has really, like, really entered the lexicon, and that they, you know, and that they were in on it, that they knew it had become a thing by that point, mm-hmm. is so cool. So yeah, Pepe had some great lines or whatever, but just like his sheer existence to me was extremely impressive. So I'm subbing him in. He's not a regular, but like symbolically, he was the guy.
I love that choice. I love that choice. Because despite everything I just said about Sam, I had Dennis as my employee of the week.
Oh, beautiful. Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah. Which brings me to my home run. Like, this was, it was a toss up. Like, and I'm pretty sure we're just going to split between these two, between the Pepe moment as the Mexican cheers, and then the Dennis reveal of, you already know my father, just pointing to that. Like, I'm leaning towards that. The Dennis reveal being my favorite, being better just because the two episodes in the making, but the Pepe one was like right beneath that. And then the Indians in the mountain sing a folk song about it as beautiful. Like the runner up. But yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I mean, I would just put in as honorable mentions. I would put in like putting the sombrero on Rebecca and like painting the mustache on her, because it's just like, maybe there were other episodes, you know, shortly before this, in seasons, you know, 6 and 7, that is like crystallized her, like morphing from like unattainable boss to like kind of one of the gang, one of Sam's friends. But again, this like kind of was like a pure distillation of it. You know, I love that moment. And again, and for me, like every moment of Sam in Cancun, starting with, you know, when we immediately cut down to him, cut to him down there, and he's got the parrot on his shoulder, and he's living his best life. And like hitting on Margarita, and just like the look of pure impish joy on his face, like just wonderful moments of the episode.
That is the spinoff or the reunion show that I want. I don't want to go back to Cheers for a reunion. I do want to see Sam down there in Cancun as tending bar like that. Like, even at Ted Danson's age now, like that is a show that I would watch.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, Omar, thank you very, very much for coming back on the show. This is always a pleasure.
Happy to do it. I mean, like, again, this is just an episode like this just kind of crystallizes and reminds you why, like, this was continuing to be a show that was firing on all cylinders, like even relatively later on in its run. Like, so many memorable moments, a lot of like fun characterizations, particularly, and of new, you know, side characters, but again, a really great representation of why we love this protagonist. So I was happy to talk with you about it.
Very, very cool. Very cool. And of course, you have appeared on episodes of Pod Dylan and Rob's movie shows and things like that. And also some of my shows, Give Me Those Star Wars. And of course, Fire and Water Records, which I don't know when the episode is coming out. It's probably out by the time you guys are hearing this, but Omar was just on my Rolling Stones episode. And I'm sure we will do more music talk and future episodes pretty soon this year. So yeah, you can check Omar out on those, until he comes back here though. Thanks to all of you out there who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Podcast Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of the Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW podcasts to support your favorite shows on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening. And until next time, we're closed.
Rebecca, you're not losing anything in Sam. I hear he hasn't stopped fooling around since he got down there.
You had him watched?
I didn't have to. The man's escapades have become legendary. The Indians in the mountains sing a folk song about him.